What I think is actually kind of challenging on both ends is not to over-treat the early ones. Those, like you said, you can just even treat sometimes with a cream, but then trying to figure out which of the other ones are more aggressive and need a little more. And I think that can be really challenging.
Welcome to The Skin Reel, your guide to all things skincare, skin health, beauty, and more, curated by dermatologists and true skin experts. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Alice Mina. I'm a double board certified dermatologist and dermatologic surgeon with over a decade of clinical experience. If you're looking for real, practical, unhyped skincare guidance and expertise, or you just think the skin is really cool, then you're in the right spot. I'm so glad you've tuned in to The Skin Reel. Now let's dive in because this is how dermatologists talk skin. Hi everyone, quick disclaimer here before we start. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. If you're looking for help on your skin journey, please check out the American Academy of Dermatology's website, aad.org, where you can search their database for dermatologists near you. It is so important that you have someone in your corner who's well-trained, licensed, and board-certified who can help you make decisions when it comes to your skin health. Okay, got it? Great. Now for the fun stuff.
Hi there. Did you know that many of the topics I bring to you on The Skin Reel are things I actually see and treat in my office as a practicing board-certified dermatologist? That's right. At Baucom & Mina Derm Surgery, my business partner and I are on a mission to provide exceptional procedural dermatology care in Atlanta, Georgia. We offer skin cancer surgery to large cyst and lipoma removals to injectables, chemical peels, microcoring, and more advanced techniques with things like liposuction, eyelid lifts, neck lifts, lip lifts, and so much more. But most of all, we love helping our patients transform their skin with real results. You know me, I am all about real skincare by real skin experts, real simple. If you're in the Atlanta area, I hope you'll stop by and see me. You can get more information at my website, atlantadermsurgery.com, or by calling 404-844-0496. I can't wait to see you. Hi, skin friend. Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Skin Reel. This week, I am really excited to have one of my fellow Mohs surgery colleagues on, Dr. Emily Ruiz, to talk about skin cancer. And May is Skin Cancer Awareness Month. And so it's so important that we discuss skin cancers and we let the public know about skin cancer, because a lot of times I think people just think skin cancer is melanoma, and they don't realize that there are actually other skin cancers that are way more common than melanoma and that can also pose a problem to your health if not treated or if aggressive. So this month, I am so thrilled to have Dr. Ruiz on. She is a double board certified dermatologist and Mohs micrographic surgeon. She is academic director of Mohs and dermatologic surgery at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, as well as the director of the high-risk skin cancer clinic at Dana-Farber. And she is also program director for training new Mohs surgeons out there. And when she's not doing all of that, she's writing papers, she's helping refine a staging system that dermatologists use for squamous cell skin cancers, and she's creating an online community for skin cancer survivors. A lot of times, I feel like there's a polarization with skin cancers. People either think they're really deadly and dangerous, and typically they're thinking about melanomas, maybe even Merkel cells. And then people can sometimes be pretty dismissive of the basal cells and squamous cell skin cancers. And while many, many, many of them, thankfully, are very amenable to treatment and we can essentially cure them, sometimes with things as simple as creams or scrapings and other times surgeries, there sometimes is a disconnect between the two, and that not all skin cancers are created equal. And some skin cancers, even if they aren't necessarily going to kill you, they can cause a lot of psychological issues for someone to have to be cut on all the time, or maybe feel like they're disfigured by either the skin cancers or the treatment for the skin cancers. And there is really lacking a community for people going through this, like there are with other cancers like breast cancer or multiple myeloma. And so we're going to be talking about why why having a community is so important if you are going through skin cancer treatment, or perhaps you're someone who is just always developing skin cancers and just getting very fatigued by it, or perhaps struggling with a very aggressive skin cancer where surgery has not been curative. So I love that we're having this conversation, especially in May for Skin Cancer Awareness Month. And if you have ever had a skin cancer or know someone who has, you are definitely going to want to stick around for this episode. Dr. Ruiz, thank you so much for being here. I know you've had a busy week because you just got back from our big annual Mohs and Skin Cancer meeting. So I'm so thrilled to have you here to help just talk about skin cancer, because at the time we're recording this, we're in May, which is Skin Cancer Awareness Month. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted to be here.
So in honor of Skin Cancer Awareness Month, right, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and sort of what your niche area is within dermatology?
So I am a Mohs surgeon. That's, a specialized procedure for removing non-melanoma skin cancers as well as superficial melanomas. And then I also practice what's called cutaneous oncology, where we treat patients that either have more advanced non-melanoma skin cancers, or they develop lots of skin cancers, and so they need to optimize their management.
I feel like there's such variability with skin cancer. It's the most common, right? The basal cells and squamous cells, the non-melanoma skin cancers, are the most common cancers in the world, more so than all the other ones combined, right? But I find a lot of people either aren't familiar with those, or they've heard of melanoma, but they don't know about all the others. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, I think that they are the most common. And for the most part, they're just so easy to treat that people don't always realize that they are still cancers. But, what I find most remarkable is sometimes patients who have one that's a little bit more extensive or more high risk, what they feel is frustrating is that when they tell friends what they have, the friends are like, oh yeah, that's no big deal because I have one too. And so I think there's a lot that's not really known about these most common cancers. And yeah, sometimes patients will say to me, oh, how does this become a melanoma? And I'm always like, this is not a melanoma. It's not going to become a melanoma. You have something totally different. So I do think there's a lot of things that aren't necessarily known from the patient's side about the two different cancers.
And there's such variability. There are some skin cancers that are so superficial and early that we treat them with a cream or we scrape them. And then there are others that are really aggressive and they need Mohs surgery or large reconstruction, and then sometimes adjuvant therapies too, like radiation or even immunotherapy. So there's this whole gamut, and sometimes it's difficult to know where people go. And thankfully, the most common are the ones that are a little more easily treated, where if you catch it early, you can cure it essentially, and patients can go about their day. But yeah, there certainly are those tricky ones, those sneaky ones. So they're not all created equal.
No, for sure. There is really a huge range. And again, what I think is actually kind of challenging on both ends is not to overtreat the early ones. Those, like you said, you can just even treat sometimes with a cream, but then trying to figure out which of the other ones are more aggressive and need a little more. And I think that can be really challenging just given the sheer number of cases diagnosed every year.
Well, certainly the work you're doing at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, you all have been doing just some amazing work and really pioneering how we think about these more aggressive skin cancers and trying to help us clinicians figure out where do we need to spend more time or more resources or more adjuvant therapy on which one, so that we're not over-treating everyone, but we're appropriately treating the ones that need it.
I always joke that we're 20 to 30 years behind where melanoma is, but fortunately, there's a lot of interest in these cancers. There's a lot of different therapeutics in the pipeline. And so I think, there is enthusiasm. And, I do think prognostication, which is our ability to pick out which of the tumors we have to worry more about, is really the cornerstone to really all management questions at this point in time.
So true. We really are behind melanoma, but I see where melanoma, even in the time that I've been training, where the staging keeps being refined. And then we got pretty good at prognostication. And now we actually have treatments that work, which has really been a game changer. But Dr. Ruiz, just kind of for the listener out there who's like, well, what is skin cancer? And why is it so prevalent? How do we get skin cancer? Is it from stuff we're coming into contact with with in the environment or putting on our skin? Where does it come from?
So for the non-melanoma skin cancer, it's the basal cell, the squamous cell. It's really from the sun. And so that exposure to ultraviolet light is the most, you know, important risk factor. And as we all know, it's hard to really avoid that, even, you know, for people who are really diligent. Many of our older patients, they'll say to me, well, when I was young, we didn't have sunscreen. No one knew about it. And that really is very true and is contributing to why we're seeing so many now. That, and also the fact that patients are living longer, means that they're accumulating all the sun exposure damages, and then they're just more prone to getting skin cancers.
And it's that cumulative sun damage, right? That is so important, right? That little bit that adds up year after year after year. And so I know a lot of my patients, yeah, same thing, with who are older, will say, oh my gosh, I wish I knew. We didn't know. We didn't have sunscreen. And I think of it as similar to maybe we're also 10 to 15 years behind tobacco, right? Where maybe in the future we'll be like, oh yeah, no, I would never use a tanning bed, or I would never go outside without sunscreen on, but we're not there yet.
Luckily, I do think it's shifted a lot in that direction. But, you know, I always tell my patients who say like, oh, you know what, this is from years of sun exposure. It's true. But I say all is not lost, you know, that there are studies, actually really nice studies out of Australia, that have shown that using sunscreen even after developing your first skin cancer reduces the risk of getting subsequent ones. And so it's amazing, you know, even later on in life, you can do a lot to help prevent developing more sun damage within the skin and then in turn skin cancers.
I find that sometimes people do get discouraged, like, well, what can I possibly do now if the damage is done? But it's really never too late. You know, the best time to prevent was 20 years ago, but the second best time is today. So it's never too late to start practicing sun protection. And what are some of your top tips for staying safe in the sun as we approach summer?
I love recommending clothing that has sun protection right built into it, because it's just so easy to put that on. You don't have to remember to reapply. People are always saying to me, oh, but like long sleeve is, you know, really hot. But actually, it's cooler on the skin. If you're not having the sun hitting your skin, you actually stay a little cooler. A lot of it's made to be super lightweight now. And so I really tell my patients to get really good shirts. They even make nice pants that are lightweight that you can wear. And of course, a wide-brimmed hat is the most important for, you know, protecting your face. People always say, well, what's your favorite sunscreen? And I say, whichever one you're going to wear, you know, because if I recommend one and you don't like it, you're not going to wear it, and then it's a waste. And I personally hate the smell of sunscreens. If I'm going to the beach, I don't mind, and I'll put on like a thick zinc-based one that's really white. But if I'm not going to the beach, I don't want to look like the beach or smell like the beach. And so I like to wear one that just goes on nicely and has no scent. And those can be very personal and hard to find. So I usually recommend a higher SPF in whatever someone's going to wear, so that, you know, it just gets on you. I think having either like an aftershave or a moisturizing lotion with like a good sunscreen built in is also really helpful, because even those shorter trips to and from the car, if you're walking, you know, a few blocks, if you're in a city, you can actually get sun that way. And if you just have it on your face, it can help a lot.
I say just put it by your toothbrush. I think most people don't forget to brush their teeth in the morning, right? Or whatever. Put it by your clothes or your keys. Put it by something that you always do in the morning. You never debate whether you're going to do it or not. And then you always just get in the habit of always having it on. I live where it's pretty sunny in Atlanta, and it might rain in the morning and then the afternoon the sun's out. And even like now, I'm sitting by a window, so you can actually get UV radiation through windows. So it's important just to have that on. And I'm a big fan of that clothing too. I love the UPF clothing, and I think they actually make some pretty cute stuff nowadays.
Yeah, they do. The other big thing I also tell patients is to try to just avoid that midday exposure, because that's when the sun is just the strongest. And so if you're going to go out for a run, go earlier, go later. If you're going to play golf, you know, try to get the early tee times. You know, I think that can also go a long way. It's really hot in the middle of the day, especially in the summertime. You know, that's another tip that I often recommend.
For someone listening who maybe has never had a skin cancer, what should they be on the lookout for? What do they look like? What should tip them off that, ooh, maybe I should see someone about this?
So I always tell patients, if you have a pimple that doesn't go away within about a month, that should trigger you to go have it evaluated. Obviously, if something's rapidly growing, you wouldn't want to wait the month. You might want to have it looked at earlier. I recommend that. And then, you know, those are really for the non-melanoma skin cancers, the basal cell, the squamous cell. For melanomas, obviously, we're looking for really dark spots, like black spots that are new on your skin. And those you really wouldn't want to wait. If you notice something like that that you're worried about, you know, having it evaluated sooner is obviously preferable.
I think unanimously dermatologists will say, look, just come in and show us. We would much rather tell you it's fine. You are not wasting our time. And I don't know how many times I hear this and it happens where they come in for one spot, which is totally normal. But in the time that they're there, they're like, oh yeah, and what about this? Or I happen to see something, right? And then that's the spot that's of concern. And so it's not a wasted visit because even though what brought you in was normal, we were able to spot something that wasn't.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree with that.
And should everyone be getting skin cancer checks? What do you recommend for people?
I mean, that's just not really feasible, I think, in this medical climate that we're in. And I think it can be challenging. Right now, there's wait times and everyone has a lot going on too. So, you know, obviously people who have like precancers, if you have like these rough spots on your skin, you definitely want to be seeing a dermatologist. If you've had a skin cancer, you should have your skin checked. Although even now, if you've had one before and it's, you know, been a while, sometimes we're spreading those visits out a little bit more. But if you develop a bunch of skin cancers, if you have a very strong history within your family of someone that has had melanoma, that would be a good reason to have your skin checked. If you have a lot of moles, you'd want to have routine checks. And so if you're ever wondering, it's helpful. You can ask your primary care. Sometimes people come in and they like to have first skin check, and then your dermatologist can help you figure out a plan, whether you need to be seen, whether you can do your own self-monitoring. Younger people who have not too much on their skin, they're pretty good at monitoring too, because they don't have too many things that can be confusing. But you know, when in doubt, it's always great to make an appointment and then you can speak with somebody about your personal risk.
And there's just not enough dermatologists, right? I know it's hard to get in. And sometimes I'll say, look, if you have any questions, just get an appointment. And then your dermatologist can say, hey, based on your family history, your personal history, what I'm seeing on your exam, you're good for X number of years. Or they may say, no, we should probably see you every 6 months. Sometimes it's good just to have that first check too. Now, in general, these non-melanoma skin cancers, they typically are skin contained, right? But have you noticed that skin cancer can affect your patients and people more than just physically?
They affect people in different ways. I have some patients who have had so many and they're not at all affected by it. But there are those people who, first of all, hearing the word cancer is really scary and that can be really off-putting. And I think, you know, they feel a lot better after coming in and having it treated and hearing that really they have excellent cure rates after their treatment. That really puts people at ease. I think there are some people who are really worried about the cosmetic outcomes of treatment, you know, and that can really impact how they feel about it. In particular, I have some patients who have had loved ones die of skin cancer, and then it really can be impactful on the experience. And then, of course, we have the patients who do have more aggressive ones, and for the right reason, they are worried about it.
It really can run the gamut. I just had a lady today in her probably early 60s, like, you know, really keeps up with her appearance and everything, and it's on the tip of her nose, and she's tried creams and all these other treatments. And I basically had to tell her, like, I think this is going to take the end of your nose off and we're going to have to do a fairly large reconstruction. And that definitely wasn't what she was hoping to hear and planning to hear. And so it really can affect people. So I think it's important that we don't just trivialize like a tiny basal cell on the arm is a lot different than a squamous cell on the end of someone's nose that has been there for years.
And it's interesting because sometimes I have patients who have ones that are in my mind are actually quite routine and straightforward and are going to have an excellent outcome. It really does affect the patient. They're really worried about it. And on the flip side, I'll have one where patient's really nervous. It is a bigger one. I understand it's going to be a different, usually the cosmetic outcomes are still excellent, but it's going to be a more of a process. And then they actually handle it really well. And so it's hard. You can't really tell how a patient's going to react. Everyone's so individual. From my perspective, it's best to try to understand the patient and their concerns so that you don't minimize what someone's experienced. sometimes their fear is related to something totally different. Like I said, like a loved one died of it. And then, you know, they don't want to say that, but that's really what's bothering them. So again, I think going in with an open mind and trying to really understand what's worrying the patient most.
What are some resources for patients who have gotten this diagnosis? I get patients who are just fatigued, right? They feel like every time they go in to see their general dermatologist, they're getting 5 biopsies. They all need Mohs or treatment or surgery, and they're just getting like fatigued. And are there support groups out there or communities for people who are going through this and struggling with it?
So a really timely question, because there hadn't really been much for our non-melanoma skin cancer patients. And myself, along with a number of other clinicians who really specialize in these diseases, have launched something called Skin Cancer Champions. And this is an online community really geared towards not only basal and squamous cell, but also patients with Merkel cell, extramammary Paget's disease, other rare diagnoses that really haven't had a home, in order to get not only up-to-date information, but also try to connect with people from similar backgrounds in terms of the diagnosis. And so we have this online platform. It's for clinicians, patients, and caregivers. And you actually join parallel communities, so it's not like they're interacting with each other. And even within the community, the patients will be put in a space with patients with the same type of background. So you're really able to connect with those types of people.
And is it sort of a forum? You can ask questions.
Yeah, it's got a lot of different resources. There are abilities to post questions to the community and start some chat groups. There's also resources which are all driven by the clinicians. We actually have a contact committee that's making, you know, up-to-date information constantly. So really trying to keep it fresh. And really, like I mentioned before, there's so much interest in the different areas in terms of treatments and whatnot, trying to really keep that up to date. You can actually find clinicians in the area that specialize in different areas as well. So there's a lot of really unique resources available to members.
So how does someone sign up, and is it free? What's sort of the next steps?
Totally free. If you search Skin Cancer Champions, you can find the website and go ahead and register. It is a closed community, so there is a registration process. It takes a few days, and then you'll be placed in the right space with the right people so that you can start using our resources and connecting with others.
You're so right. There really has been a lack. There are support groups and things like that for melanoma, but non-melanoma skin cancers, the basal cells, the squamous cells, and people maybe have never even heard of extramammary Paget's disease and Merkel cell. Like, these are sort of these orphan skin cancers that still affect people. And so I love that there's a special group and that they can be sort of parsed out based on what they have. And of course, also, so people can get good information. I know that there are Facebook groups for people fighting basal cell or squamous cell groups. Again, it's great to have that community, but they're typically not run by academic centers or physicians or clinicians. And so the information is not always up to date and accurate. And so I love that this is really started by a group of clinicians who specialize in these skin cancers and are given that kind of real valuable information.
Yeah, that was really was the goal, was to provide really good information, because I find that when you go to some websites, it's a little bit outdated. And then, you know, to your point about the support groups, our goal is actually to try to launch those, you know, at some point, actually have professionally run support groups. And it's hard in skin cancer because, again, while it's the most common cancers, you know, these basal and squamous cells, the patients who have these bad outcomes are rare. And so being able to connect at a center in a room like breast cancer patients can is really hard. And so we're hoping that this will be a platform to bring patients together. And actually, that was the driving factor for the community. It was a patient of mine who said that her husband died of multiple myeloma, was treated at Dana-Farber, and he was able to go to a support group, but there was nothing for her with her advanced squamous cell. And so it really, you know, hit home that, yeah, we really don't have anything for these patients, and they exist and they want to meet other people. So, you know, I'm hoping that it will be that space for the community.
And skin cancer is kind of unique because even with basal cells, there are people who have something called Gorlin's or basal cell nevus syndrome. And typically these are not fatal basal cells, but they have so many, it can really be distressing and traumatic for patients. They feel like they're always being cut on, or they always have these kind of sores. So I think being able to have a support group for someone like that, yeah, maybe the mortality is not there, but it's still causing a lot of morbidity for these patients.
Absolutely. So, you know, we classify patients based on those types of conditions, as well as the types of treatments they've undergone, so that we can really try to make sure people are interacting, because we also don't want people to be overly worried if they don't need to be. So really trying to be thoughtful about the type of content we provide and who the patients are interacting with.
Well, I think that's wonderful. I love that you all have created that. I'm a part of it. I'm excited to be one of the clinicians on there. And I think it's great. And I'm definitely going to hand this resource out for the patients who I feel like could really benefit from some more community and information and just a good resource to go to, because we all know the web and internet there, you can really go down some rabbit holes, and it's important just to get really good information. So I love that. So since skin cancer is so prevalent, I mean, are there things we can do other than staying away from the sun as best as possible or some protection? Are there any other modalities to help prevent this or to lower your chance of getting skin cancers?
So there are some things you can do. You know, there's a vitamin pill called nicotinamide that it's over the counter. It's really safe. And there was a randomized study from Australia published in the New England Journal of Medicine in healthy patients that showed a 23% reduction in non-melanoma skin cancers. So, you know, we recommend it to motivated patients. I will mention that there was a follow-up study in organ transplant patients that, you know, the messaging of the paper said that it didn't work, but there were some issues with the paper. They actually had to stop recruiting the patients in Australia because they couldn't find one since they were all on it from the prior paper. They couldn't randomize them. And so they just cut the enrollment short. And when you look actually, though, at the results, you see that there was still a 24% reduction in squamous cell carcinomas, the invasive kind, which is what they saw in the original paper. So still, you know, really powerful, especially for that population. So we do recommend it still at our institution. I know there are some people who have shifted away in light of that last paper. But again, like I said, you know, especially for our transplant patients who get a lot of skin cancers, it's really helpful.
I recommend it as well. I feel like it's a vitamin. The side effects are really low. And I'll tell people, look, it's not a magic pill. You don't take this and you're never going to not get another skin cancer necessarily. But if it can help even, you know, 10%, 20%, that can be significant for people. So, you know, why not? If they're already taking a multivitamin, I use it. And yeah, with those immunosuppressed transplant patients, they're the ones that worry me a lot. So if their transplant doctors are fine with them taking it, I'm like, what's the harm, right?
Yeah, that's how I feel. The other thing I really love for people with a lot of sun damage is actually chemo creams. And these, I know, can be really hard to get through. You're red for like a couple weeks. Actually, you stay a little pink for a while, but it takes care of a lot of the precancers, but also just the sun damaged skin, which we know, you know, leads to the skin cancers. That has to be obviously done in conjunction with a dermatologist. But I often talk to patients about that, especially if they have extensive sun damage or they're making a lot of skin cancers. I really think it's helpful. I actually like to do it myself every year because I think it's so beneficial.
I have never tried it myself, but do you do the kind that's compounded with calcipotriene?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, interesting. I would be curious. Do you get red?
Really red.
You do.
And then I was, okay. Yeah, but it's worth it.
I was sort of liken it to when we use the, if you've ever been to the dermatologist and they've frozen a spot off on you with the liquid nitrogen, I'll say that's kind of playing whack-a-mole, right? You have to wait for something to appear and then you spray it and try to make it go away. But a better option would be to try to prevent the stuff that we can't even see, that subclinical damage. And so the chemo cream's great. It's a fairly short course. I'll tell people to do sections because a lot of times, especially for their first time, it's hard to do your whole face all at once, but it's covered by insurance. So that's a great option. I use that as well.
I personally do the Band-Aid approach. I'm like, I go all in.
Go big or go home.
Yeah. But when I tell patients, the biggest thing to me is just to like treat an area, not spot treat, because to your point, you treat one little spot, then right next to it, something pops up and you're kind of like just chasing your tail. The other thing that people are asking a lot about now is Fraxel laser. There is a paper published showing a reduction in skin cancer, but I'll be honest, I was a little bit underwhelmed with the methodology in that paper and the analysis that was done. So I don't really know what to make of it. You know, I think theoretically, like if you're kind of resetting the sun damage, then sure, that should help with skin cancer prevention or reduction in, you know, developing helping new skin cancers, but I don't think that paper fully supported the message in the way it was done, but it is something that's coming up and I'd love to see that type of analysis done in a more rigorous fashion.
It kind of makes sense, right? If you're removing parts of the skin that have sun damage and perhaps you're stimulating growth factors and sort of an immune response, that you could help remove some precancers. My biggest issue with that is do the Fraxel if you want it for kind of the cosmetic reason too, but insurance isn't going to pay for it. So I don't see that being like a mainstay for the average people.
I think that's a really important point because this was a retrospective paper. There's probably a socioeconomic difference between who got the Fraxel and who didn't. And, you know, I think, yeah, to your point, like Fraxel is great for, you know, cosmetic reasons. Like that's really good. The chemo creams are much cheaper and insurance, you know, will pay for them. And we know that they can really reduce the precancers and help prevent as well. So,
and really anything that's kind of removing that top layer of skin, that damaged skin, can be helpful. So I do a lot of chemical peels.
Photodynamic therapy.
Photodynamic therapy is another option too. So there are some things that can be done to help. You can't necessarily undo the sun damage, but you can help remove that damaged skin surface if it's there and you're getting a lot of precancers and a lot of skin cancers. I would love to have you leave our listeners, Dr. Ruiz, with your top three tips for someone who has been diagnosed with a skin cancer. What should they do? What should they, freak out? Should they take a deep breath? What do you recommend?
Take a deep breath because most of you are going to be totally fine. Again, this is the most common cancers we're talking about. They're just most of the time really, really easy to treat. For the most part, they just require a surgery and then you're cured. Which makes it even really great to treat these patients because everyone leaves, for the most part, really cured of their disease. But, you know, again, there are some of these that will be a little more aggressive. Some can grow bigger. So, you know, don't just ignore it. Take it seriously. You know, if you're worried about something, do see a dermatologist. And really, I think a lot of the preventative measures that we talked about today really do help. We don't just recommend them to recommend them. They really do make a difference. And so, you know, really do wear good clothing, wear sunscreen, wear a hat. And if you're interested in doing a little more, you know, make an appointment with a dermatologist to talk about some of these other things that we brought up from a treatment perspective.
I had a patient come in for his follow-up with me today with this amazing hat. I mean, it must have had like a 5-inch brim on it. I was laughing with him. I said, is this just a prop or do you actually wear this? And he said, no. After seeing me twice, he got the memo and he was like, I love you guys, but I don't know. Keep coming back here. And he went and he bought a wide brim hat and he was wearing it out the door. And I love that. So I love when a patient actually brings their hat to their appointment because then you know they really are wearing it. He was wearing it from the car in the parking lot to the door. And yeah, these measures, they seem simple, but if you do it day in and day out, it will make a difference over your lifetime. I really, really wish people took that to heart. And I find sometimes we focus on it too late or not as early as we should. And I just hope the message gets out there because I tell people like, put me out of a job. Like I am okay if I never do Mohs surgery again because all the skin cancer is gone. But unfortunately, it just seems like with our population getting older and older and people living longer and longer, and especially living longer with transplants and other conditions or they're immunosuppressed, that we are unfortunately seeing more and more of it. So it's even more important, right, to take those really proactive steps now.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
Well, I love that we have a great resource for the public out there, the Skin Cancer Champion Forum. And I will definitely include that in the show notes so people can find it. And Dr. Ruiz, where can people find you, follow you? Do you have any place you want to send people?
I'm a simple person who is strangely not on social media. I know that's like really hard to believe, especially as someone who's just launched an online community.
We'll get you there.
Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, always happy to take care of patients in the area. We'd really love to see everyone on Skin Cancer Champions because I really do think it is a great resource that I find to be more controlled than social media.
I sort of came on social media just because I felt like you have to meet people where they are and where they're getting their information, right?
And no, it's there. It's there. I might be fighting the hard fight here, but.
Well, listen, I'll do it for you and I'll include that information on my social media channel. And thank you, Dr. Ruiz, for all the great work you're doing for skin cancer patients out there. And thank you everyone for tuning in and we'll see you next week. That's all I've got for this week's episode of the Skin Real Podcast. But here's some great news. One of the most valuable things you can do to help me and other new potential listeners to find my show is for you to both rate this show and leave a review. So, as a special bonus for you, if you leave me a review, take a screenshot and email it to info@theskinreal.com, and I will send you a thank you free PDF on skincare truths versus hype, because you know I love spreading the word of good, truthful skincare. And please be sure to share with your skin friends so that we can get the word out there about real skin. And until next time, remember, no matter where you are in your skincare journey, always remember to love the skin you're in, because real skincare from real experts can be real simple.